I've also asked the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message. Every day, every school, at every level. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
Test together.
Radio.
Radio Free V-Dot.
Repeat, this is a pirate transmission from District 13 with a message.
Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
This is the voice of the American Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt, episode 1519er, here coming out from Studio A, live inside the American Redoubt in an undisclosed location. Thank you all for joining us. It is a blessing to have you all with us. And we have several things that we want to cover tonight, and we are in the middle of a series on the coming underground. And this is part three, so thank you for joining us, and thank you for all of the great positive feedback from those of you out in the listening audience. Thank you for your continued support through your prayers. And those of you who are – this is a listener-supported operation. This is a patriot, partisan-supported venture. So thank you so much for your support. Your $5, $10, $20 a month, it all adds up, and we squeak through every month. And so we are very grateful. We're also very grateful to our sponsors who cover the hard costs of the internet and everything involved in continuing with Radio Free Redoubt. So please, if you're in the market, we want to ask that you support them. And you know what? You can just support them by protecting their business through prayer, and maybe even shooting them an email from time to time just saying, hey, thank you for supporting Radio Free Redoubt. We appreciate you helping these guys stay on the air and continue to move forward with the mission. And the mission is still going forward, and we are not going to let up, not till the bitter end. But we're all going to do it together, because we are together. You're not alone, right? You used to think that maybe you were the only one. You were had a crazy person trapped inside your mind because you see what's going on in the world. You start to think maybe you're the one that's losing it. And actually you realize, no, they almost had me. It's not true. I'm not crazy. They are. And you're absolutely right. You hold true. Hold fast to those values, to your American heritage. That thing that you got going on there in your gut, it's telling you something. Listen to it. You're on the right track. So, self-reliant, God-fearing patriots, your name is my name too. I am John Jacob Schmidt, and this is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. You can also follow us on Facebook /RadioFreeRedoubt.com. And I know some people are upset about, you know, OPSEC. Don't do Facebook, don't do social media, because they can draw a line to all the connections of people that support you. Oh, no, it's just a small percentage. And besides that, there's so many people on there that, you know, it just creates all white noise. They know there's a bunch of conservatives out there, and they know they all talk just like the liberals do, and just like people in car clubs do, or churches, or anything else. So the more people that are on there, the more white noise it creates. And so what if they find out that there's millions of conservative, God-fearing patriots that are out there that are all sharing information and stories and encouraging one another? Let's see here. I got a couple of announcements before we get into everything. And we will not have – I just got a text from Fox 519 saying he will not be able to be on tonight. For some reason, he didn't say why. He just said, I'll explain later. So there's some kind of a story or excuse behind it. But you know what? A lot of you guys probably already know. We had Fox 519 on yesterday. And for the whole show, he was the guest. We were talking about the economy and trying to make sense of all of the stuff going on in Greece and how one thing affects the other and how that equates to us. What does that mean to you and me? And it was a good show. It was a really great conversation. It's always good to have him on. But he won't be with us tonight. Maybe we just burned him out. He only had so many words and we used them all up yesterday. So I don't know. Hold him up in your prayers. Who knows what kind of drama is going on? Let's see. I want to announce also the store. This has been a slow release. First, we put it out to Amron Core in the forum, and then we posted it on the Amron Core site for all the core operators that are not in the forum. And then we put it over on Amron.com off to the side. So this has been a slow release because we're building up the inventory because we just had a small, you know, couple $100 to work with to try to get some t-shirts and stuff in, get the stickers made. And I know a lot of you guys have been asking about that. Those are now available over at the store. If you click on the banner on the right-hand side, we've got t-shirts and window stickers, window decals there now, and some other items too. But we've been listening to the feedback, and at the top of that list, coffee mugs and hats. So those are going to be on the way. We're listening to you guys, what you want, and you want to promote Radio Free Redoubt. You want to proudly wear, whether it's the skull and crossbones or the traditional logo or the Amron American Redoubt Radio Operators Network gear. That is out, and more is on the way. So special thanks to Golf Bravo 01 heading that up. He's doing an amazing job. He's a great designer too for the stickers, but those are all out. And if you got suggestions, ideas, or things that you'd like to see added to the store, you let us know. And hey, Father's Day's coming up this coming weekend for Father's Day. Might be able to surprise him with a Radio Free Redoubt shirt. Okay. So that's available. Also, memberships. Oh, we had our primary partisan who was handling the memberships processing. This is all volunteer staff. This is not our hearts are in it. It's about the cause. We don't do this for a living. So, I mean, I do sort of. I try. Well, yeah. But this is all volunteer. And so the partisan that helped process the new memberships, he had eye surgery and he's been having issues and hasn't been able to do that. So we've had Polly 01 step up. Of course, not like her plate's not already full. She's as busy as I am. But we are falling behind, and we're like back to May 20. We're up to May 26th for the memberships. Those normally would take 5 to 7 days. So we give ourselves 10 days, just a little bit of breathing room, but it's like 2 to 3 weeks out processing those. So please be patient with us. We're pedaling as fast as we can and we'll get all that stuff taken care of. You are past the deadline date for getting the discount for your camping and entry fees for God and Country. But that event will be moving full forward. You can still get your tickets July 3rd through the 5th up at Marble. Go to marblecountry.com. It's going to be a great weekend over the 4th of July. Lots of activities for patriots, for their families, including camping. Radio Free Redoubt will be broadcasting and streaming live from on location. We'll be doing a lot of demonstrating ham radio gear and answering a lot of questions. And it's always good to be able to meet you guys and talk to you and shake your hands. So really good stuff. All right, let's get into the news and commentary. The news and commentary is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series, a 10 book series about the collapse and most importantly, the rebuilding. That's what we like to focus on. And that is a 10 book series that is also out in audio now. Okay, you guys remember this week, the assault that took place on the Dallas police headquarters had nothing to do with ISIS, had nothing to do with the race equality demonstrations going on. This is actually somebody who is frustrated about a child custody issue, apparently. He went and got he was the only one, apparently, that was – we don't know how many people were involved. There's mixed reports. But the driver of the van was killed after a SWAT team basically took him out by first taking out the engine block with a 50 caliber sniper rifle. This was a armored van. As a barrage of bullets sprayed out a dark blue van, sprayed out of a dark blue van, used to stage a brazen assault on Dallas Police Headquarters early Saturday morning. Even witnesses recognized this was no ordinary form of transportation. This beast of a van sold just days ago eerily lived up to how it was advertised on Facebook, on which it was touted as a zombie apocalypse assault vehicle with gun ports capable of drive-by mowdowns in full armor and bulletproof windows, just in case someone might try to take this bad boy from you, the ad read. Investigators suspect the van might have belonged to a sheriff's office in Georgia before it was decommissioned and sold off. It was most recently sold by Genco Sales out of Georgia. The business owner could not be reached for comment. And the Ford van sold on eBay for about $8,200. So, you know what's coming. They're going to ban the private ownership of armored vehicles. They're already trying it with body armor. Seattle and some areas have banned gas masks. Anything that the citizens might be able to use for their defense or their welfare in a catastrophic environment, nope, can't have it. That's for special people, you know, government people. So I would not be surprised one bit if we started seeing emergency legislation rammed through banning armored vehicles for the citizenry. Without a special permit, of course. You know, if you're a movie star or something, well, of course you'd be able to get one. What else we got here? Water theft in drought-stricken California. They're saying lock your taps. Drought has thieves stealing water like it's liquid gold. This was out of KPIX, Channel 5. Police are warning for businesses and residents to start locking up their taps. California's drought has gotten so bad, people are stealing water. Thieves busted the locks on spigots at a popular Asian shopping center on Barber Lane in Milpitas just to get their hands on what has become liquid gold. The Palo Alto resident Jason Zur said he's shocked that it's come this far, but water's becoming more expensive than gas, he says. That is not good. Unfortunately, they're all trying to look for other places to go where the water's still flowing, like the American Redoubt. See, the unfortunate part is many people are moving to the American Redoubt strategically because of their social, religious, political beliefs. It's very conservative, extremely conservative in the American Redoubt. Especially in Idaho and even more so in northern Idaho. But the liberals are starting to look at places, hey, they still got water and it's so beautiful there. And this is what's interesting too, because Chris Ann Hall, my sister in the faith, she is in Idaho this weekend right now. Matter of fact, they just wrapped up a few hours ago a three-day seminar series that she did on the genealogy of the Constitution. This was in Benoit County, Idaho, not too far away. And the liberals, they've got a couple of websites. One's called Better Idaho, which is a joke. It's oxymoronic. Liberals with a website called Better Idaho. Because what they want to do is ruin Idaho. But what's interesting, they went ballistic when they saw Chris Ann Hall's coming to Idaho. Now, what is actually comforting is at the bottom of their Facebook page, the comments by readers are almost overwhelmingly supportive of Chris Ann Hall. Like, she's a great speaker. She speaks the truth. You guys should maybe listen to her before you start judging. And so it was really good. They stood up for her. But some of the liberals They're not even liberals. They are lemmings. They're what Lenin called the useful idiots. And so they're saying, I can't believe all these conservative extremists coming to North Idaho, ruining our state. These guys are so out of touch. They think that conservatives moving to Idaho is going to ruin Idaho. Well, guess what, sweetheart? It is already extremely conservative. But they don't get out of their little world, their little box, right? They live in their left-leaning, communist-supporting social media, and they get this false impression. Or they read the Coeur d'Alene Pravda, and they think the whole area is a bunch of liberals, which is what you would think if that's your whole world. Because in their minds, they even say that the politics in Idaho are just completely gone, beyond repair, because it is taken over by extremist radicals, right wings. So what they don't realize is that those representatives were voted in by the people and represent the people's values. This is a conservative, extreme, radical, right-wing conservative area because we believe in God and the Constitution and we want to preserve our heritage. And we oppose the leftist, communist, globalist agenda. And that's radical and extreme to these people. They don't get it. We'll be right back and we will continue with The Coming Underground. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Well, it's cutoff time in the legislature, and it's time to take score. Once again, the freedom agenda has far surpassed expectations. In fact, we've done better in the last 3 months than we did in the last 2 years combined. Out of 80 freedom agenda bills, we had 52 receive hearings, 12 were voted out of the House or Senate, and by building coalitions around issues of principle, we had over 72 Democrat co-sponsors. We also had 30 national news stories as well. And now we have a coalition of Western states working together for lower taxes, less government, and more freedom. We even stopped the push for mandatory vaccines and more gun control. Look at what we can do together in the pursuit of freedom. We can quite literally change the direction of our state. So visit Freedom Agenda Washington on Facebook to find out how you can help. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican.
This is Shan Hemphill with Works LLC. We provide lifetime guaranteed holsters and magazine carriers for the armed citizen. Check us out at werkz.com or call 855-WORKS01 for your custom gear needs. Don't forget to use coupon RFR at checkout for 15% off. Thank you and God bless.
This is Chris Walsh of Revolutionary Realty in North Idaho. We've developed springs, installed solar and wind power, installed root cellars, solar hot water heaters, all documented on our website, free for public use. Our articles are fully documented, full-page photos and drawings detailing each endeavor. Take a look at our off-grid information on our website, www.revrealty.us. Again, that's www.revrealty.us. When you're looking for property in North Idaho, call a revolutionary, 208-667-1776.
All right, we're back at segment two, and I had to do a little flippy floppity there. I just got a text right before I went into the break. I was looking at it as I was trying to wrap up and go into the break, so I just clicked on my break number two audio file here because he said, "Iron the economy's back on." So we're going to bring that to you right at the end of this segment, segment two. So, yay, Fox 519 came through. Good job. Now, segment two is brought to you by LoadedPantsHanger.com. They've got some great products for hiding your valuables and your firearms in plain sight among your clothes. It's called LoadedPantsHanger.com. So I want to remind you, we are within the 2-week window starting from last Sunday. I mentioned it. Anything on their website is a 30% discount through Mother's and Father's Day. You just have to put in the coupon code MOMDAD. MOMDAD. That's it. Okay, let's start into this. Part three of the underground of this continuing series. And we're going to go until we've covered everything that we need to cover, at least at this stage in the game. There's more. There's more that needs to be covered. But timing is everything. We want to make sure we're appropriately dealing with each topic. I just really pray that I'm just talking about the right things at the right time to the right people when it needs to be said, and not talking about things that don't need to be talked about at this point or this juncture. But as we've already laid out, which we are going to continuously reinforce, there is a need, and there will be a need for an underground, and there is today in some places in the United States, believe it or not. But I started doing some research, going through some of my material, my sub-courses from, you know, the SF, John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center curriculum stuff. And then I was doing some research, and I mentioned this article by John Mosby, one of the associate editors over at Forward Observer magazine, which we highly recommend. Sam Culper is the senior editor over there and does a wonderful job. We'll be seeing him next weekend, actually, in Central Washington. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at this different material and trying to compare it. He did a great article about the basics of the auxiliary in the underground. So we want to talk about this because there is resistance movement versus the underground or a subversive activity. It could be criminal activity, or it could just be something that's not compliant with the state, but you have the lawful authority to do, but maybe not the legal authority to do, like have church. In many countries, it's illegal to have a church. A Christian church, particularly. So they are breaking the law, but what they are doing is not unlawful because it is in accordance with the laws of the higher authority, or in our case, the highest authority, which is God. So there are two different ways to look at, you know, the underground. One is how it pertains to a resistance movement, which we'll talk about in just a minute. And then the other one is just a ad hoc or informal, non-official movement, but not necessarily, you know, a resistance movement. So a resistance movement, let's talk about that first and get it out of the way. It's also what might be referred to as a revolutionary type of movement, which is actually what the communists have done in multiple countries in the last 100 years. Most of these resistance movements that you see, guerrilla fighters, they're almost always communists in recent history, say the last 75 years. But we've also seen resistance movements. Well, I mean, that's how our country was founded. Now, a resistance movement, or like that falls into the revolutionary category, is distinctly strategic. And its goals are to alter the policies or the sentiments, the laws, and the overall culture, or to overthrow the current regime, which might be necessary to do to achieve the strategic goals, you know, of altering the policies, sentiments, laws, and the overall culture. You might have to overthrow, and well, usually it's necessary in some way, either violent or nonviolent means. You would have to overthrow, change the current regime. So a resistance movement in a revolutionary sense has two arms, political and military. Now, the political side of the movement often enjoys some level of freedom of activity to move about. They go and they negotiate and they have meetings and they're doing press releases, right? We see this in Palestine. We've seen this in, various different places around the country. Now, these are the legislators, lawyers, clergy, business leaders, community leaders, or other people of influence who represent the people of the movement and the cause. But sometimes they're often arrested, like in South America, what's going on, Venezuela, and where's the other one, Chile? And they're held as political prisoners. So you may or may not, it really depends. And when they're arrested, they're usually charged with things like sedition or advocating violence and accused of trying to start a coup, you know, that type of thing. Anything that's a threat to the current regime. So sometimes they're free to move about and they act more in a diplomatic capacity. And sometimes they themselves are part of the underground and they have to sneak out press release tapes through underground means to get their messages out. This just released. This tape was just acquired, you know, secretively from the underground, and they'll put out a news release. But it's news, so the news stations will air it, and then they end up still getting their message out. But often a resistance movement reaches a certain point, especially when it becomes significantly costly for the regime that's in power. They'll begin direct or indirect negotiations. This is when the political leaders are able to openly negotiate terms and policies which favor the resistance. And this is important and necessary to have legitimacy, legitimate leadership, since this brings the legitimacy to the resistance sometimes, usually. Or you can't have legitimacy without those legitimate leaders. But the political component is critical. And just as importantly, the military arm is critical. The political component develops strategy and policy, and the military arm is the teeth to implement that policy. If you have just political but no military arm, the oppressive regime can just say, "That's sweet. Now step aside. We're here to take your cattle and your land because we just struck a multi-billion dollar deal with the Chinese to turn this place into a massive solar farm." Now, the military arm showing up to defend a rancher's land and his cattle by themselves are just rebels. They have guns and can inflict a lot of casualties in the short term. Even if they're right, and even if they win that particular battle, they'll lose the war without the political arm. Now, the political arm, made up of legislators, sheriffs, community leaders, independent media, they add legitimacy to the actions of the military arm and ensure that there's accountability and that both sides of the issue can be brought to light. So, government, let's say Bureau of Land Management can't just come in and just mow everybody down and say, "Oh, it was self-defense," right? There's people on both sides that can hold them accountable. So, in the case of Bundy Ranch in Nevada during the Bunkerville standoff in March and April of last year, 2014, that was an individual single incident. The tyrant stood down, and they're still scratching their heads trying to figure out what to do next over a year later. But when these incidents increase in frequency, it's just a matter of time before someone blinks and don't just stand down. Recently at the Sugar Pine Mine incident in Oregon, we had another situation in March and April this year where the BLM was attempting to seize property without due process, and that's unconstitutional, and it's called tyranny. Patriots rallied again, and the BLM stood down for now. Now, when these incidents increase and become more sustained, they won't be just isolated incidents. There will be a string of abuses. These individual acts of resistance will eventually merge together and become a movement. And the tyrant will become increasingly agitated and annoyed. And that's when shove will come to blows. And that's when the political arm and the military arm will enter into a new domain, requiring additional support, such as logistics, communications, planning, and intelligence, safe houses, information technology, IT stuff in this day, medical, public information, formerly known as propaganda. And when the government has a spokesman come out to talk and his or her title is PIO, Public Information Officer, make no mistake about it, that is the propaganda officer. It's not a bad word. It simply means someone who propagates a certain doctrine or idea or a sentiment, spreading information in such a way as to result in influencing and having a desired effect on others, on the audience. And propaganda is a whole nother topic as far as target audiences and how that's implemented. And the left-wing extremists in this country have it down. It's what communists are best at. So the movement would consist of A, a political arm, B, a military arm, and C, the underground. And the auxiliary is part of the underground, but they play a specific supporting role to each arm, depending on the needs. For example, and we'll take a break here in just a minute. The underground maintains a safe house network with area or regional contacts. The auxiliary member, the individual, maintains his safe house that maybe only two other people in the underground know about. That auxiliary member also works at the veterinary clinic, who acquires medicines and supplies to give to that other one single contact in the underground, who takes it for use where several people are maintaining an underground hospital. And sometimes the underground and auxiliary blur together, but the underground are more of your dirty work fighters and operators. They would be the ones who disguise themselves as Indians and dump the tea into the harbor so everyone in the militia, the military arm, can honestly say, "What tea? Their hands are clean." While in the auxiliary, you have a couple guys on horseback waiting for one or two lanterns to be lit in the bellwether so they know when to ride like lightning to alert the countryside to grab their M4s and to get into the ambush positions because the UN troops are coming to disarm the people to enforce a treaty our glorious leader signed. So that's a resistance movement, which isn't necessarily the focus of this series, but I want you to have a brief overview of it. We're going to focus on the most probable implementation or the need of the underground. Because right now we're focusing on an ad hoc, informal underground movement, unofficial underground movement of churches who go underground to avoid being shut down or avoid state sanctioning requirements that might be dictating what they can or cannot talk about in church or what version of the Bible or may or may not be authorized. But as we go, I'll intermingle some of the concepts of the underground between the informal ad hoc underground and the underground as it pertains to a resistance movement, an organized resistance movement. And ad hoc just means unofficial, non-institutionalized, on your own, passive resistance. Although we do still enjoy some political and legal covering, there are legitimate leaders in influential positions pleading our cause from, for example, pro bono Christian liberty law firms to legislators to coalitions of pastors. It's still not an official movement, not in a revolutionary sense. And as we continue to deteriorate in our country, we'll lose more and more of that legitimate political covering. And at some point, the tyrant is just going to take off the gloves and say, "We're tired of playing patty cakes with you in the courts. We're fed up with your insolence, and we're going to start stomping skulls and taking names." But we're not there yet. All right, so I'm going to talk a little bit about John Mosby's article, "The Formation and Organization of Resistance Movements," when we come back. So stay right there. We'll be coming right back with segment three. And hey, this is Fox 519. This is his new time slot for this show. All right, we'll be back in a minute. Fox 519, it's all yours.
The writing is on the wall as the state of Texas makes an incredibly bold move to protect their citizens and their fiscal future. The world continues to ride the razor's edge of complete financial disaster. I am Fox 519, and I am bringing you the news that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is your Sunday edition of I Am the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Redoubt.
Hurricanes. Earthquakes, EMP, terrorism, financial collapse, and civil unrest. The threats to our way of life are legion. If you want to survive, you need a plan. The 7-Step Survival Plan by best-selling preparedness experts David Kobler and Mark Goodwin will provide a blueprint to make sure you're ready for the dark days ahead. The book covers all the prepper basics, including bug-out bags, barter items, and security. Survival favors the prepared. Don't delay. Buy the 7-Step Survival Plan in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.
Well, welcome back. And thanks again to Mark Goodwin of the PrepperRecon.com podcast for sponsoring Eye on the Economy. Go visit Mark's site today and support Mark and David. Both of those guys are excellent patriots and brothers. Well, the old saying, don't mess with Texas, still stands. And Texas has made an incredibly bold move in this past week. Texas has enacted a bill that will repatriate $1 billion of gold from the New York Fed's vaults to a newly established state gold bullion depository. But that isn't all they did. They also included a special provision in the law that would prevent a forced seizure of the gold by the federal government should there be economic difficulties. Current Governor Greg Abbott signed the bill on June 12th, and is currently in the process of completing the storage facility to house the gold soon. But there could be a problem in the collection and repatriation of the gold. Texas's gold has been rehypothecated to someone else by the Fed. Here's a quote from Keith Weiner of the Gold Standard Institute. Yes, that is his real name. And we do have a wiener that is advising on policy, and the nation's policy in gold, for that matter. Go ahead and get your giggles out now. Here is the quote. In a lot of cases with gold, you may not have a clear title to the metal. You may have a counterparty relationship that makes you a creditor. If the counterparty has a problem unrelated to the gold, they can default, and then you become an unsecured creditor in bankruptcy. That means you get whatever is left after liquidation, often just a fraction of the initial value of your holdings. This is the exact scenario that happened to futures brokers at MF Global. Mr. Weiner had known people who had warehouse receipts, two gold bars with a specific serial number, but that gold had an encumbered title, and so they became unsecured creditors in the bankruptcy. Well, folks, he may be a Weiner, but he's dead on. Texas's gold is not their own. Though it is a bold move, it will not be enough for Texas to lay claim to their own gold. The thieves at the Fed have already stolen it and have sold it to cover the debt and future debt of our nation. Again, this goes to show you, if you can physically hold currency in your hand, unless you can hold the physical currency in your hand, everyone, it's not yours. Remember, if it's not in your vault, it doesn't belong to you at all. In other world news this week, Greece continues its march toward default at the end of June, but the question remains, will the IMF completely let them walk away from their debts? The answer is no, and here is why. Yesterday, the head of the IMF, Christine Lagarde, said that the governing board that they could lend to the Ukraine, even if the Ukraine continues not to service its debt. That is to say, the Ukraine, whose bonds tumbled 9% after the country's American finance minister, Natalie Jaroszko, said that Ukraine will default on its debt unless its creditors, who mainly comprise of America and Russia, agree to work on a structured deal. Now, I don't know about you, fellow patriots, but America and Russia don't agree on much these days, and the likelihood of that happening are nil. Lagarde's statement also indicates that the Hermes and tanning bed connoisseurs of the world do not know the difference between a loan and an equity investment. Which, what is lending to an insolvent nation, what's that the equivalent to? Continue giving money to an uncle who never pays you back? But more to the point, the very reason that IMF have catched up hardline positions with Greece is precisely because the IMF alleges that unless Greece takes steps to end its solvency, the D.C.-based IMF, and a lot of you don't know that the IMF is actually located in America, will no longer give the country any funds sourced primarily courtesy of U.S. taxpayers. So again, we're funding Greece. Ladies and gentlemen, the IMF is like a bad pimp. They will love you at first, tell you how beautiful you are, take you out, wine and dine you, and then do horrible, terrible things to you. Should you try to leave, they will slap you around, hurt you, and then do even worse things to you. They will not let Greece go. Ever. Greece sold their sovereignty. Greece's default may well cause the systemic collapse of the economy as we know it. But like John Jacob and I talked about on Saturday's show, being a God-fearing, self-sufficient patriot is what will get you through what is about to come. Thanks again for listening to the Eye on the Economy and Radio Free Readout. This is Fox 519 signing off. God bless.
Segment 3 on Radio Free Redoubt. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I want to remind you guys, Survival Stores, the Prepper's Assistant at 419systems.com. That's 419ersystems.com. Is a program available for you to be able to maintain your storage, your rotation schedules, keep track, especially if you have multiple locations where you have things stored, including your it also helps you manage your bug out routes, different locations. It's just an overall prepping tool at 419systems.com. Go check those guys out. They're really good folks, and they've got it wired pretty tight. That is a really cool program. Okay, this segment is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate at selkirkmountainrealestate.com. For those of you getting relocated to the panhandle of North Idaho, they will help get you moved. They specialize in dealing with patriots and preppers, so get your retreat property. They'll help you find it. All right, now, John Mosby wrote this article, and I want to go through it with you and kind of customize it to fit what we're talking about, which is the coming underground church. So it's really written from a guerrilla warfare, resistance, revolutionary perspective, but the principles still apply and can be adapted. And who knows what the future holds, how you might be able to apply this to other things. But we're talking about the underground church right now, not necessarily active resistance, guerrilla warfare stuff, but just in a changing world where we might have to start operating unconventionally. Like, you just can't go to, your regular church on Sunday because there might not be any churches that haven't compromised that are still open on Sunday. So, okay, let's talk about this. This was from 2013. And the resistance movements generally begin with the desire of individuals or small groups of individuals to remove intolerable conditions imposed by an unpopular regime. Sound familiar? Now, opposition towards the regime and hatred of existing conditions that conflict with the individual's or the group's values or their interests and way of life spread from the individual or group of individuals comprising the group to family, close friends, and neighbors. So this isn't just a private grumbling that's going on down in your heart and in your head. Other people are beginning to feel the same way, and you start to share with each other. This can result in an entire community cohering in an obsessive hatred for an established regime. Generally, this hatred has historically manifested itself as sporadic, spontaneous, nonviolent, and violent acts of resistance toward the regime or their available representatives of the regime, because you can't touch the members of this regime, right? They make themselves untouchable. So what's the easiest thing to reach out and grab by the collar? They're agents. They're willing representatives. As the discontent grows, natural leaders, historically former military personnel, clergymen, local political leaders, and community organizers. Remember, most resistance insurgencies in the last century had a basis in communist socialist ideals. That's what I just said earlier. But they emerged to channelize that discontent into an organized resistance movement that promotes its own growth. And the population must be convinced by this leadership that it has nothing to lose, or at least more to gain, by resistance than by maintaining the status quo. And this is where we are nowhere close to yet, because as I mentioned last week, we haven't hurt enough yet. People can still jump. The problem is they are so entertained and so comfortable and fat that they don't feel the squeeze. They're not squeezed. They're not uncomfortable. Oh, so what if you can't talk about homosexual stuff at our church, Or so what if we can't have a home group meeting because of the city ordinance? Well, just won't go to home group. We'll just go to church on Sunday. They don't care. They're not squeezed enough yet, but it's coming. You're gonna have to get off the fence at some point in the future, and it's not too far off. You're gonna have to pick a side. Separating from the wheat from the chaff, that's what's coming. The ultimate key to progressing from increasing discontent to active insurrection is the belief by the populace that they have nothing to lose by revolting. See, we're nowhere near that yet. Combined with the belief that they have a genuine chance to succeed. Well, I would add that they combined also, or alternatively, they feel the risks involved outweigh the fear of failure of trying. So in other words, they fear the consequences of not revolting more than they fear getting caught. In our case, as Christian patriots, we fear God more than man, as we should. Now, additionally, there must be some sort of catalyzing trigger event that ignites popular support against the regime's power. This is what they're trying to avoid. And a dynamic resistance leadership that can exploit the situation when it arises. This is really super important. To have the leadership cultivated in place that can respond immediately and exploit that trigger event. And we saw that with Bundy Ranch, where the overreaching oppressive government outside the rule of law and without due process tried seizing property for what we found out later, corrupt reasons. But when they tried to use the federal government force to come in and take land and cattle, that was a catalyzing event that created the catalyst where patriots gathered from all around, for thousands of miles away, to all rally around this one rancher. And it also brought in the political support, the necessary political arm of your resistance, combined with the military arm, those who had arms. This is what the Second Amendment was all about, right there. Without the Second Amendment, without people being armed, the politicians by themselves screaming that they're opposed to this BLM action would not have deterred them. If the armed citizens showed up and there was no legitimate covering there to act as the political arm, then they would have brought in all kinds of forces. In fact, we found out later that the administration at the highest level were discussing military options for dealing with those rebels, homeland domestic terror threats down there at Bundy Ranch. Seriously. But see, you had the combination of the two, and they stood down. It worked that time. But that was the catalyzing trigger that brought everything together. So you have to be prepared to take action unilaterally. Don't wait to be told what to do. But when you see dynamic leadership who've proven, they have a proven track record of being in the fight and fighting for the right things, when they do rise up, support them, back them. They're sticking their necks out. That representative, that clergy, that business leader, that community leader stepping up there to stand nose to nose with the administrators on the regime side, they're sticking their necks out. They need to know that you have his back while you're reveling in the knowledge that he has your back. And the case in point, Coeur d'Alene, immediately when the city announced that the pastor at the hitching post would be in violation of their human rights laws, facing misdemeanor charges, including jail time, legislators, community leaders, clergy, elected officials, etc., began meeting, strategizing, developing an information campaign, and worked with a Christian law firm that takes these cases on pro bono on behalf of the pastor in filing a lawsuit against the city. The legitimate political arm of the resistance you must have. This is a critical part of your movement, and there should be a movement. This is the combined efforts and actions of both open and hidden that are part of the effort to achieve your goals. They're going to advocate on behalf of the oppressed. They're going to work to change policies. They're going to introduce and promote legislation or work from the inside with legislators to subvert the agenda of the anti-Christians. Dealing with godless people. Example, another one, abortion, working in the legislature. You can't argue with them. Right here it says in the Bible, that's a sin. We can't support that. We're opposed to that. That means nothing. It, right over the heads, because you're dealing with godless people in our legislators. So just like with abortion, you can't argue from a biblical perspective, when you're talking about the psychological and physical trauma of having an abortion, that's where your argument comes from. That's where you take the argument to them. If you want to have change, now we should be able to stand firm and say, no, I'm not going to compromise. I'm not going to talk about psychological and physical trauma of having an abortion. I'm just going to say it's wrong, it's illegal, and it's a sin. That's all I need to say. I'm going to stand on that. Okay, I understand that. But when you're in the legislature trying to actually convince these people and have victories, sometimes you have to supplement your strategy. Not only do my personal beliefs is that that is sinful, here's some proof to back it up about the consequences of abortion. It causes psychological and physical trauma. And of course, these are the arguments that we're actually using, and there's actually a decrease in abortions. Of course, I think a lot of that is probably the new technology allowing for people to just go take a pill and they never even had to go get an abortion. You just killed the baby right from the get-go. But you come in there all offering alternatives such as adoption, and then you push for legislation making adoption easier and more affordable. You're dealing with a godless adversary. The word of God is foolishness to them, right? So you might have to change some of your ways. These legislators need to be very adept at reading this enemy, finding their buttons, how they can get through, and then you just cover them in prayer so that their efforts are effective. They will inform the public through social media, press releases, and other information campaigns, and form coalitions. This is your legitimate side. And then in the advanced stages, they will be there. So once the resistance begins to act out against the regime, there are two types of initial instances: clandestine resistance and overt resistance. We're going to talk about those two when we come back. This is Radio Free Readout. Stay right there. We will continue the future of the coming underground. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
I will also ask the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message. Every day, every school, at every level. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
Fourth and final segment here at Radio Free Redoubt. You can contact me, John Jacob, at RadioFreeRedoubt.com with your ideas, suggestions, feedback. Appreciate all the positive feedback. It's very encouraging. That's good. Thank you. And if you're listening on the go, RadioFreeRedoubt.com is the website. And for the Nationwide Disaster Preparedness Network of radio operators, go to amron.com. That's the American Readout Radio Operators Network. This segment is brought to you by Katie Armor, the makers of Level 3 body armor, frag-coated, top-of-the-line, just awesome stuff. They also have ceramic plates as well. But anyway, go to katiearmor.com. Use the coupon code JohnJacob for your discount over there. And they include shipping on everything. Shipping. I think my voice broke there. Now, right before the break, we started talking about clandestine resistance and overt resistance. And I am about one-fifth of the way through my notes for this show, and we are down to the wire in the last segment of the show. I just can't believe this. We're going to keep going until the mission is complete, until we're fully covered this. So let me just move this around here. I'm just going to make a little note to myself. Stand by one, patience, and here we go. I had to drag something around in my notes because it got all split up. Okay. There's clandestine resistance and overt resistance. Now, clandestine resistance is conducted by people who outwardly appear to follow their normal mode of existence. This type of resistance may or may not be controlled by any level of leadership and may include the following activities by individuals and or small groups or cells. For example, political action and campaigning, propaganda development and dispersal, espionage, sabotage. He's got a previous post on the critical differences between sabotage and terrorism. They are not the same thing. Black marketeering and intelligence gathering. These are all components of the clandestine resistance. They live a normal life, and most of the people who know them would never suspect that they do the things that they do to help support the resistance. Now, overt resistance is conducted by individuals trained along paramilitary lines. This is the guerrilla force and provides the military arm of the resistance. So, for the purposes of this study, replace military arm with open action, such as public speeches, rallies, demonstrations. You're rallying against the regime because you want them to change their policies on banning home churches, for example. You're not conducting a home church, but you are rallying, you're picketing, you're supporting, you're spreading the sentiment, spreading the word that there is a significant number in the population who are not pleased with this policy of, say, banning home churches. So that's open action. Okay, now, clandestine side of that is you're actually conducting home churches, regardless of what the law says. You may even possibly defy ordinances. Like, for example, if there's an ordinance, no protesting abortion within 500 feet of an abortion clinic. Well, you do it at 400 feet. And challenge them. You push the line, right? So you could have a sign saying, you know, no signs or speech within 500 feet of a gay pride parade. Because, you know, that could disgrace those participating or marching in the parade, make them feel icky. So that's banned. That's just hateful. So when you are for this overt resistance, you're not carrying out armed conflict here, but you are not doing it covertly. So this is the stage where you have to be willing to be arrested for what you believe in. If you remember a couple of months ago, Anthony Bosworth from the Freedom for All went to support a 10th Amendment rally down at the federal courthouse in Spokane, and he had an AK-47 slung across his back while he's standing there drinking a cup of coffee waiting for the rally to start. They came out and said, you can't do that. You can't have a firearm in the facility. And they took his weapon and they arrested him. He was willing to be arrested because he knew the law. As it turns out, he was not in violation of a law, and he was perfectly within his right to have a firearm in the open, slung, while he's standing there drinking a cup of coffee. But they didn't like that. Look, he's got a weapon. We can't go out there and do something about that. We can't have that. So they actually didn't – they ended up not charging him for having a weapon where he's not supposed to. They charged him for not following an order. But the order's not legal because – or he was ordered to do something that he was already, you know what I'm saying. This is the bizarre incident. And so now is the time for that. Open, overt resistance where you could be arrested. Now, not everybody's called to do that, but some people are. How many pastors have been arrested? They arrested a pastor for holding a home church in Arizona, which I'm going to be covering here in the next segment, next week. But see, now is the time for getting arrested for that open, overt action when you are totally justified and you're in the right and you're going to stand your ground. Now, in the future, it will be different. We'll talk about the tactics to apply based on the situation, when to actively resist openly and when to passively resist or covertly resist, like going gray or giving the appearance of being compliant. And that will be a whole show in and of itself later on this summer. Because remember, we're entering that criminalization to incarceration stage. They're beginning to arrest people who are holding churches that they deem illegal. All right, so we're just now entering the incarceration phase. A lot of times they don't incarcerate them, they don't arrest them, but they just fine them for violating, say, human rights laws or anti-discrimination laws because of their religious views. So they're not incarcerating that many. They're mostly just nailing them financially. But you are seeing a transition into incarceration. We've seen that in the last few years. I'll be pointing some examples out in the United States. And of course, that always precedes the execution phase. Now, as previously mentioned, there are three necessary components to a successful insurgency. But remember, we're replacing insurgency with underground Christian church. We're not talking about having an insurgency. So let me rephrase that. As previously mentioned, there are three necessary components to a successful underground Christian church. The subversive underground is always present and is the first component of the resistance to form and begin active operations. The strategic goals of the resistance movement will determine the level of development for all three components. You have the subversive underground, the support auxiliary, and then the paramilitary guerrilla force, which we're replacing with the actual underground church. They're the ones that are actually conducting operations. You've got church leaders, you've got pastors, you've got support personnel, and then you've got the people that are attending that church. They're all carrying out an underground illegal church. Okay, that would be your paramilitary guerrilla force. For this example, it's underground church. So let's talk about in the last couple of minutes. this is going to be a good series. Let's break these down. Those three: the subversive underground, the support auxiliary, and the actual underground church. Starting off with subversive underground. The subversive underground is a cellular organization within the resistance movement that has the ability to conduct operations in areas that are practically inaccessible to the paramilitary guerrilla force, such as populated areas that are under tight control of the regime's security force. So let me translate this to you for the purposes that we're talking about. The subversive underground would be small groups of maybe even teams of two or three or five people whose sole mission is to go where you can't have open operations. You can't have this church that's teaching things out of the Bible because it's in violation of a local ordinance. So you do that separately. The subversive underground, which is part of that church, they would actually go to state-approved churches. This is where you gather information and intelligence about how they're operating the state-approved churches. And this is also where you actively search for recruiting material and for those people that are maybe going to the only state-approved churches because that's all they know about. But they're frustrated, and they were wishing there was some type of underground church, but they don't know about it yet. So you have your subversive underground that are there recruiting, trying to pull these people who are looking for maybe a real church, but only underground, because they know that state-sanctioned churches are very controlled. This is what's happening in China. It's what's happening in several other countries around the world, where there are state-sanctioned Christian churches you can go to, but what they say in their message is either not biblical or partially biblical, or many things they cannot talk about at all. So that's what the subversive underground would be. And it doesn't have to be under the regime's direct control. For our application, it could mean attending a church where there's a pastor and a staff openly willing to enforce the so-called hate laws by policing what Bibles are allowed in the churches and what topics are taught. They may even be willing to report violators. And that's why you would have to have a subversive underground going in there, posing as just normal people, happy with the way everything's going, but they're really there on a different mission. Because this, you'd have to expect that there would be enforcement by proxy. That would all be done internally, because self-regulating and self-censoring that's the goal of the oppressive regime. Because if they can gain compliance from within the churches, where they police themselves, if you have compliant pastors and their staffs, that's a force multiplier for the oppressive regime. They don't have to exhaust manpower and resources policing the church if the churches are willingly self-regulating, just like the Nazis did before and during World War II. All they had to do is audit the sermon notes occasionally and reward the snitches for saying something if they see or hear something in the church that might be subversive or anti-establishment. And now we have the Department of Homeland Security's clergy response team programs, where pastors are urged to drive home Romans chapter 13, but focus only on the part that says to obey the government. Just skip over the part about how government is supposed to reward and commend those who do good and punish evildoers. A little redefining of what is good and what is an evildoer, that ought to fix that. Somehow I just don't think our federal government and the Bible's definitions of good and bad match up across the board. This would be an area where the underground may regularly attend church, you know, a state-sanctioned, human rights-approved church for intelligence, recruiting, and meeting purposes, passing off covert messages and notes. There will always be a state-approved church, like in today's China and Turkey and elsewhere, the 20th century Soviet Union. These state-compliant churches could be a great place to meet with others in the underground, because you're right out there in the open. It's safe. And if you're going to that church, it means you're obviously in compliance. Be watchful, though, of agents and plants looking for the subversive underground. Okay, let me continue. The underground maintains the ability to operate in these denied areas because it operates clandestinely, returning to innocuous day jobs when not performing their missions. Typical tasks for the subversive underground include, but may not be limited to, gathering intelligence and the development of the intelligence networks, and the development and operation of subversive pirate broadcast systems that control the dissemination of propaganda through radio, newspapers, and leaflet distribution, and or internet communications and web page development. Alex Barron, actually, let me put his name down, because he'd be a great interview to talk about the darknet. Because this is where, in the darknet, this is where we may have to operate like criminals one day, by exchanging Bible studies and notes and even communicating with each other, because there's a side of the internet called the darknet. This is where money launderers, criminal cartels, drug and sex traffickers, pedophiles, and everything else lurk and hang out. This is where they do business. The reason why they do that is because it is so nearly impossible, unless on the human end you mess up. It's so difficult to track people, who they are, where they're coming from, where this message is coming from, where it's going. All right. So this is where I was talking about, I think, in the opening in segment one or in part one of the series, to study the criminal element and how they operate without getting caught. I mean, they do get caught, but it's because they do dumb, stupid things and make mistakes. So how can we learn from that? Very important. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap up because we're at the end of our time. But I want to talk about communications and OPSEC next week. That's how we're going to start off with. Communications and OPSEC as it pertains to the underground. And, of course, in our case, the underground church, which is not a problem today. You can have an underground church today and they're not going to really care. But one day they will. So what we're talking about right now is perfectly legal today. You can have a private church that you don't tell anybody about, and you can talk about anything in that church you want to. But there are some exceptions in this country where people have felt the need to go underground. I'll be talking about some of that next week. We've got tons more to cover. So be checking back. Stay tuned. That wraps it up for episode 1519 here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. You guys have a blessed week, and next week's going to be a little iffy because I will be out of town. So I'm going to have to try to figure out how to finagle that for broadcast, remote, pre-record, something's going on. So anyway, I'll figure it out. We'll be here one way or the other. I'll let you know. That's all I got. So I will see you guys in just a few minutes for Partisan Radio Volume 13. And this is going to be a short one. I want to talk about some forms and some other communication stuff, and then we'll wrap it up for the week. You've been listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt, Radio Free Redoubt Studio A. Good night.